What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Bookmart. I'm your host, Sherry's Joy. I am half of the DigiCast, and I am very excited to do this show. I have been waiting to read this book for quite some time, and I am finally reading it! And today I am going to talk about 112263 by the awesome Stephen King. So, this is full-on spoilers. This is not a book review. I am just talking about me reading the book and my experiences while reading this book. I am going to do this book in two... we'll do my bookmarked in two parts. I did mention that in the previous shows. If you haven't listened to the previous shows, check them out. But I did mention in the previous show that I was going to possibly split this up into three parts because it's such a long book. But I think splitting it in two parts is pretty good. I mean, there is a lot going on in this book, and I can do it in two parts. So I appreciate you listening. This is full on spoilers. So if you want to read this book and you don't want to be spoiled, I would suggest stopping this podcast and going and read the book and then joining me or listening to me discuss the book. So let's get started. All right. The main characters, when we first start the book, we are... we're reading like an epilogue, and it is with a teacher going over some essays. I don't know why I'm so tongue-tied right now. Going over essays, and what we learn is that the teacher is Jake Epping, and he is a high school ELA teacher, and he also teaches GED, and he is grading GED essays, or, you know, essays that the students had to write so they could get their GED. I guess this is like another step part. So we're reading, and we're reading about a character named Harry who's been through such a traumatic experience with his father, and it doesn't really go into it, but we learn that there was like a murder in his family. And then the book starts, and we start with Jake Epping. We're introduced to him again, you know, formally. And we're also introduced to Harry Dunning formally. So he's actually, Harry is a janitor that works in Jake's high school. And he just happened to, you know, take the GED classes. So he passes, and they go, you know, at graduation, he and Jake meet up at graduation, and Harry is very, very thankful, and he, you know, expresses his thanks to Jake and everything. We learn that Harry is actually old enough to be Jake's father, which is weird. But Jake is like, hey, I'll treat you to, let's go get some lunch. So I'm going to treat you to a burger and shake or whatever. So they go to the local diner, and the diner is run by Al Templeton. And that's when we meet Al Templeton. And they're, you know, having the celebration lunch. And Jake is like, hey, Al, this is my friend Harry. He was a student. He just got his GED. So Jake's like, well, that deserves a photo on the celebration, on the celebrity wall. So Al takes a picture of Jake and Harry and puts it, you know, for the celebration wall. And I'm kind of like confused at this point. I'm like, is this the past? Is this the present? What year is this? But we do learn that it is 2011. So we are in 2011 at this point. And after the celebration, you know, however time goes by, we are back in the school setting. And this is part one, actually. I'm sorry. This book has six parts. So this part right here is part one. And I like how, again, you know, I apologize, I'm all over the place. It's just how I talk. So I like how this book has the different parts, part one, two, three, four, five, and six. And each part, it has chapters, and it's about three or four chapters, except for the last part. We'll get into that later. But each chapter has... each part has about 3 to 4 chapters, and each chapter has subchapters that are short, and I like that. But it is a complete page turner anyway. It's a really good book. I'm reading it pretty quickly. So anyways, we're back at the story. So we learn that Harry is a janitor in the school and that Jake works at, and he has a bad leg. He's got like a limp and everything. And the kids are so horrible, even teenagers. Oh my goodness, it's so immature. They call him hip-toed or hop-toed Harry, I guess because he kind of like has a small hop when he walks. And he's also, his motor skills are not motor skills, but he's a little bit on the slower side of things, where he's, you know, he doesn't comprehend things a lot and he talks real slow and things like that. So we're like not really understanding completely what's going on, but we kind of think that it has something to do with this murder that happened. So we're just, you know, learning, and we're meeting about what happened with them. And then we really go into his actual essay. The teacher, you know, he goes home, Mr. Epping goes home, and he's reading over the essays, and we really learn about what happened to Harry. So Harry wrote about it in his essay. When he was a kid, his father came over and he was really mad at his mom. They were divorced, and he was really mad at his mom, and he came over just on a rampage with a axe or a hammer, actually a hammer, and he killed his mother, his siblings, and it was just an awful mess. And then he tried to kill Harry, but Harry was hiding under the bed with his rifle, with his toy rifle, or maybe it wasn't a toy rifle, but it's a rifle, I guess, because kids in the 50s, right, they had like real rifles. He was hiding under the bed and he was hit in the head, and his brain got damaged, so that's why he's a little bit on the slower side of things with that. And then also his leg was broken during all of that, so he was the survivor of that, and that's just a really traumatic, horrible thing. So that's what happened to him, and that's what he wrote about in his essay. So, you know, the next scene where we're with Jake, and he's in the school and he's grading his normal, you know, his regular student, high school student papers, and he gets a phone call, and it's Al, and Al's like, hey, you know, can you come over to the diner? And Jake is like, well, I've got a lot of things going on, and Al's like, no, you come over. So he goes over to the diner, and then Al looks like extremely sick, like really, really sick. Something is going on. He, you know, his hair's gray, he looks frail and fragile, he's coughing something awful, coughing out blood. It's really, really bad. And he did not look like this yesterday. So Jake is like, well, what is going on? So that's when Al tells Jake about he has terminal lung cancer. And we're like, well, this didn't just happen overnight. What's going on? So he's really making Jake think, you know, he's really getting Jake to have an open mind about everything. He's like, you gotta swear you're gonna believe me if I tell you this is a doozy, but you gotta believe me. And he's like, yeah, sure, what's going on? So he tells him about his travel back into 1958 and how he was there for 5 years. And he was like, you can't just take my word for it. You've got to see it for yourself. So he takes him to the back of the diner where there's like the pantry where they keep, you know, like the dry goods and things like that. And there's these stairs. And he goes down the stairs. And as he's going down the stairs, the atmosphere changes and he realizes he's outside. So you get down to the bottom step and you're outside in 1958. Okay. And it's just mind-blowing. There's a yellow card man, is what they call him. He's this guy that's there where you have to give him a coin, or actually a dollar. He wants a dollar in order to pass. And, you know, he's like, I don't have a dollar. I have a 50-cent piece that I can give you. So he gives him that, and then he passes and he walks around the town. It's the same town. They're in Lisbon, Maine, and he's walking around the town and just mind blown, you know, of everything that's going around him. It's just very, very 50s. So he makes his way to a fruit stand, kind of like a Woolworths type of place, I'm guessing, but it has, they have like milkshakes and stuff and fountain drinks. So he goes and he gets himself a root beer, and he's talking about like the difference in the root beer back then and the root beer now and how it's so much better. And he goes back in, you know, he goes back and he goes back to 2011 to Al, and Al is like telling him everything he needs to know about the time travel and his ideas. And he wants to stop the Kennedy assassination, but he's too sick and fragile himself to do it. And he was already in the past for 5 years, and that's when he caught the lung, well, not caught, but that's when he developed lung cancer, and it just progressed over the 5 years that he was there, even though he was only there for 2 minutes. So the thing is when you go, you can stay for as long as you want, but when you come back, it's only been 2 minutes past, you know, 2 minutes time has passed. But I guess while you're there, your body and you age. Your body ages, you age, even though in our time it's only been 2 minutes, which is very, very weird, very, very strange. But then they talk about the butterfly effect of it all. And the butterfly effect is, in this book, which I think it's accurate in most cases, in the cases of the butterfly effect. So whatever you change back in the past is going to change now. But in this book, the difference is when you go to the past and you make the change, you come back, that change stays, and all of the, you know, ripples in time are, you know, they stay. But if you go back to the past, everything resets. So everything that you did when you traveled back then, everything you did when you traveled in your first trip, if you go to your second trip, you undo everything that you did. And so that's a little bit different. But Al really wants to stop the Kennedy assassination. And he's like telling Harry, he's telling Jake about all of his reasonings as to why. And he has like this whole journal of things and information. And, you know, he's got 50s money, and just, he's given him all of, you know, you need to, your clothes, the first thing you need to do is change, is buy some clothes, you gotta go to the bank, you gotta withdraw this money, I set up a bank account for you. He's given him like IDs that he's set up and everything, and he's got them, he's good to go, he's got all of this thought out and planned, he just can't implement it himself because he's too sick. So Jake is like, oh gosh, I don't know, this is crazy, but what if I could change Harry's life, you know, because Al tells him about the story of this woman who she was shot in 58 or 59, when 58, 59, she was out hunting with her dad, and another man, he was hunting as well, and he missed his target, and the bullet hit this girl, her name is Pollen, her last name is Pollen, Carolyn Pollen is her name, and she gets shot in the leg, and she becomes paralyzed. So Al went back into the, you know, he went in, when he was in the past, he distracted the other hunter so that he wasn't out hunting that day, so that Ms. Pollen wasn't even in that area, so she wasn't at, well, she was in the area, but she wasn't at risk for being shot and paralyzed. So he fixed that, and she's not paralyzed, and she's like a senator now, and she's really, you know, on top of things. So Jake is like, well, ooh, I could go back and I can, you know, help Harry and his family, because this, that story really touched him and it really disturbed him. So that's what he wants to do. He wants to go back and he wants to stop Harry's dad from murdering his whole family. So Jake gets ready and he goes back to save Harry from being killed by his father. Not being killed, but from being hurt by his father and him killing his family. And when he goes there, it's September. So he has a conversation with the yellow card man, and the conversation's a little weird, but it's clear that the yellow card man is a wino, and he may also be aware of something weird's going on here, but we kind of don't know what. But, you know, he gives him the half dollar, and he passes through. So then Jake goes, and the first thing he does is go back to the fruit store to get another root beer, because he absolutely loves the root beer. And then he heads up to the Chevron gas station, where they sell cars. So he goes there to use the restroom, and then he looks at the cars, and he finds this Ford Sunliner that he really likes, and he's like, I'll come back. So he goes to get a haircut, he goes to the bank to withdraw like $1,000, he goes to the thrift shop to buy a suitcase, then he goes and he buys the car, and he stays the night at the inn there in Lisbon, and the next morning he's headed to where Harry is from, and that is none other than Derry, Maine. And for those of you who don't know what Derry, Maine is, Derry, Maine is the town that it took place in. So he's on his way to Derry, and when he gets there, something seems off about the place. It looks eerie and just water holy like and just weird. So he goes and he's driving around, and he meets a bunch of like rude people. And he goes to this, like, dive. The first bar he sees is kind of like a dive. And he meets this rude guy he calls No Suspenders. And is, like, asking about the Dunning family. And the guy's like, Dunning, you know, this whole town has Dunnings in it. Go look in the phone book, blah, 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 blah. He's, like, not helpful at all. And he's just rude. So he goes and he looks in a phone book. And, yeah, there's, like, 3 or 4 pages of Dunnings. And he's just like, wow, how am I gonna find anything? And he's walking around, and he's looking around, and he sees these kids, this girl and this boy, they're practicing some swing dancing, and he walks over to them, and he's like, hey, you know, how's it going? You know, I was just watching you. And he knows about swing dancing, because him and his ex, they did a swing dancing thing at their wedding. He has an ex-wife. She was an alcoholic, and it really put a dent in their wedding, or in their marriage, and they're divorced now. But he recognizes the swing song that's playing, and he actually ends up helping the kids with their practice. He gives them some really good tips, like slow the record down and then practice that way, and you get your flips and everything on point, and that's how you can really work. So the kids give him some information about the Dunning family and where you can find the father and where the actual kids live. Because come to find out, they're separated. The mother and father are separated. So the Dunning family is, Frank is the dad, Doris is the mom, then they have the oldest son is Troy, Ellen is the daughter, Arthur is his name, but they call him, I want to say, Tugga, and he's about 12. It's T-U-G-G-A. So I'm thinking Tugga. If I'm incorrect, it's Tugga, Tuga, let me know. Leave the comments below. And then, of course, we have Harry. So they're just like, you know, be careful around here, because the town is all, you know, oh my god, because the year before he finds out is when all the stuff from It was happening, you know, the kids being abducted by clowns and Georgie being taken into the sewer drain and things like that. So yes, this is more proof that the Stephen King world is, his writing is all one world. So then Jake, you know, he's like, okay, thanks, you know, and all this, and he wishes them luck and everything like that. And they, after they tell him where to find Frank Dunning, the father, he goes to a bar uptown, where, you know, where the people at the dive are like, you'd be more comfortable going uptown and blah, 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 blah. So he goes uptown. He actually changed his name. Well, he's going by George Amberson, and he's saying that he's there for real estate. And so he's, like, talking to the townspeople, and that's how he finds out that Frank was married before and had a kid. And the mother and the kid, you know, took the kid and split some years ago. And just, he's talking and he's just finding more out about the clown murders and just how weird Derry is. And he learns that Frank is actually a butcher and people really do like him. He's very friendly and funny. And he actually finds Frank and he follows him home to see where he lives. And, you know, some time goes past and Jake is actually, he stays there till about Halloween to kind of stop the murders from, to not kind of stop the murders, but to actually stop the murders from happening. And he runs into No Suspenders Man. And we find out No Suspenders Man, his name is Bill Turcotti. And the night of Halloween, all hell breaks loose, and we're in part three of the first half of the book. Part three is, well, I'm sorry, before part three, we gotta go into what happened at Halloween. I'm sorry! So Halloween, you know, he's going to stop Frank from doing all of this craziness to his family, and he's like a half hour right before it's go time, Turcotti comes and he stops him, and Turcotti is like, you're not gonna do this, and he's like, why have you been following me? Because Frank Dunning is mine. He killed my sister and murdered my nephew or niece, and actually nephew. And Jake is like, what? So, Turcotti goes into the story. In 1938, his sister was married to Frank Dunning, and his sister disappeared, along with his nephew, Mikey. Mikey was a baby, or like a toddler. We don't really know how old. I'm thinking baby or toddler age, just from what I've read. And so, he swears up and down that Frank murdered his sister and nephew, and that's why they're missing, because it's been 20 years. This is 1958 now. It's been 20 years, and him and his sister were really, really close, so she wouldn't just disappear without getting in touch with him somehow, some way, and she just hasn't. So he thinks that they were murdered, and he's been plotting on killing Frank Dunning for a long time, for 20 years, and he hasn't done it. And he's like, he's got a bayonet and a rifle, a gun, and he's got the gun that Jake has. Jake bought a gun back in Lisbon along with his clothes and stuff. So Turcotti is just trying to stop him, and he's like, you know, I've got 10 minutes, what am I gonna do? Then, you know, I got 5 minutes and all this other stuff. Meanwhile, Turcotti is, he's smoking and he's having some sort of like a heart attack, it seems, you know, from the symptoms. Like, he's really, really gray. He's sweating. Sometimes he's stalling, like he can't move. And then at one point, he has to sit down. He, like, collapses. And he's just completely out of it. And Jake is like, you don't look so well. You don't look so hot. And, oh, I'm fine. And then he lights up a cigarette, heart racing, and just craziness. Like, he's about to just drop dead. And so Jake finally just, he's like, I got 5 minutes, I gotta do something. So he is able to, you know, knock Frank out because he passes out and he's done. He's like, I gotta go. So he just runs from him, and he goes to try to stop things from happening because he hears the car coming. So when he gets to the house, he goes through the back door, and Frank is in the front door, and he's like going crazy. Frank does actually get to, he actually does strike the mother, and she goes down. And it's like a really brutal, brutal murder that was explained in, you know, in the essay. I mean, the mother's brains were like splattered on the couch. It was bad. It was so bad. But this didn't happen when Jake tried to save everything. So the mother did get struck, but she did not get killed. He actually was able to save all the kids except for Tugga. Tugga got slugged in the head, and his head split wide open and his brain splattered everywhere. But everybody else was saved. And he sneaks out the back. He tells Harry, Harry's like, who are you? And he tells Harry, I'm your guardian angel. Don't worry about me. You'll be good. And then he leaves and he escapes. And we're into part three. So he makes it back to 2011, and he actually has a bad gash on his head, because what happened was, when he was getting ready to kill Frank, Turcotti comes and saves the day. Because Frank had actually hit had actually hit Jake on the head with the hammer, and it wasn't a regular hammer, it was a sledgehammer. And Turcotti, he saves the day. He had the bayonet, and he just put it right through Frank a couple of times, and he was like, "This is for my sister, and this is for my nephew," and then he collapses, and Turcotti collapses as well, and we're to assume that he actually died from his heart attack or heart issue that he was having. So back in 2011, he, with the bad head and the bad gash, Jake does make it back, and he, you know, he's with Al, and Al's like, "You made it, oh my god, what happened to your head?" So Al's dressing his head, Al is like coughing all over the place, and he's not doing too hot, but it's only been 2 minutes since he's been gone. Really, he's been gone for two months. But he notices that the picture that Al took of he and Harry has been replaced by a congressman that Al has no idea or no recollection of taking the photo. He's like, I didn't vote for him, but he's on the wall, so I don't know. I don't know what happened. And remember, he went down in, so the last thing got reset. So Miss Pollen is actually still in back into a wheelchair. The next day, Jake looks he goes to the library and he finds the old newspapers. So they were actually looking for Jake, but only because they think that he was a missing person, because there was blood in his car. Like, he parked his car at Lisbon and it seemed like there was a crime scene and he went missing. And everybody who was interviewed in the town was like, "He was a nice man. We really liked him. And it's a shame what happened. I hope they find him. I hope he's okay." So that was the only thing that was about, you know, him. He was actually making sure that they didn't suspect him of murder. But that was it. It was just that he was, you know, his car was bloody and abandoned. So they were looking for him to make sure he was okay. Then he looks up the Dunnings in Derry and finds Ellen. She was a survivor. Everybody survived except for Tugga. But she looks up Ellen. He looks up Ellen to make sure that Ellen is doing okay, and that everybody's actually doing okay, but Ellen is the only one that he finds in the phone book. And he calls, and, you know, he pretends that he's like this old friend that they used to hang out with and play with. And she was like, "Yeah, you're not fooling me. I've been a radio DJ for 20 years and I know people, and you do not sound like you do not sound like you're Harry's age. You sound way younger than that." And then she says that Harry died in Vietnam. Harry's dead. He died in Vietnam. And then she's like, "You're him, aren't you?" And Jake is like, "Him? What are you talking about?" And Ellen's like, "Harry always told me that a guardian angel saved our lives that day, and you must be him, aren't you?" Jake doesn't deny it, he doesn't admit to it or deny it. He just is very upset because Harry died in Vietnam. And Ellen starts crying. She's like, "You son of a... you SOB, if you were such a guardian angel, you should have saved him from dying in Vietnam." She's like very angry. She goes through, you know, all of the anger, and then she cries and everything, and the conversation just kind of ends. He hangs up because he's like distraught himself. So he wants to go back and he wants to fix it and do it right this time. So he goes back to Al's house and he finds a note, you know, at Al's house. He finds a note and he sees Al, and Al has some tears in his eyes. He's in bed, and he left the note by his bed, and there's a bunch of pills. And he reads the note, and in Al's note, he's like, "You've got to get it done. You've got to go back. You've got to get Oswald. You've got to you know, save Kennedy and make things right, and you gotta do it now because the diner will be sold tomorrow. And that was that. So it's basically like a suicide note. You gotta get things done and you gotta do this now type of thing. We don't have enough time. So Jake gets himself together and he goes back through the stairs into 1958 where he sees the yellow card man, and the yellow card man is dead. He had a wine bottle in his hand and it was broken and it looked like he, you know, committed suicide. He sliced his neck with the glass from the bottle, which I think is, I feel like there's something going on there, some kind of connection between the yellow card man and Al, because what a coincidence is that, like, Al, you know, suicide by pills, but I get it, like, the lung cancer, he was terminal, and he just didn't want to be in pain anymore, maybe, and now the yellow card man, suicide, you know, I don't know if there's a connection, but I'm kind of thinking there might be. And so he's like, all right, well, I gotta get the hell out of here. So he goes off to the town, and the only thing he does is buy his car. He buys the car again, and he heads straight to Derry. He buys the suitcase, and he buys the car, and he heads straight to Derry. And he gets to Derry, he does everything all over again, and he succeeds. He actually doesn't wait till Halloween. He goes straight to a cemetery, and you're kind of like, why? And he waits in a mausoleum, and then, you know, next chapter we find out, oh, okay, that's why he waited. So at one point, Frank visits his parents' grave, and Jake was waiting for him, and he kills him at his parents' grave, and then he heads on out. And before he heads out of Derry, he actually goes to the dive to leave Turcotti a note with the bartender, and the bartender is like, what do you want with Turcotti? And he's like, I'm a friend, this is not bad, just give him the note. And so he tells us what he wrote in the note, and the note is just giving him a warning about his heart and to see a doctor about it. And that's kind of like, you know, that's what happens. So then he does a lot of betting, and he wins like a ton of money, and he starts to head south, and he stops in North Carolina to use a bathroom, and he saw a sign, you know, that said girls, GURLS, and then guys, GYS, and then like a picket fence, not a picket fence, but like a wooden picket, like, sign that says coloreds, and he was very curious, so he goes, you know, to see what that looked like. And it was a path, like a dirt path on the side of the building. And there was no bathroom. There was a brook. And on the brook, you know, there was at each embankment of the brook on either side, there was like a plaque of wood. So you go number two, you go number one. And if you have to go number two, you sit on the plank and you just poop right into the brook. That was a hard read. And then there might be like a third wall here in the book. He was like, so if you think that, you know, my experience in the 50s or is, you know, is all Mayberry, here's, you know, this, it's not, here's what's going on. I was just wowed by that. And I mean, that has to be accurate, right? Or that can't be, like, over-exaggeration. And I actually asked a couple of people who are old enough, you know, to remember the 60s. And I was, you know, I was like, hey, this is what I read. Is this an over-exaggeration? And they were all like, no. I believe that this is probably a thing. This, you know, some in some places. Just, wow. Good Lord. So he keeps on going. He stops in Florida for a little while, And he rests there, and he kind of stays put for a little bit. He reads a sign that says, hey, you can get your bachelor's degree at Oklahoma University by mail, and here's how. So he writes back, and he asks for the information, and he just had to take a test. And the test, it was so crazy. He showed us, like, two questions. The first question was, I don't know. They were just so, I can't remember the exact questions. I'm sorry. But it was, like, just so, like, who wrote the national anthem, you know, or who's on a dollar bill type of questions. And he answered all the questions, and he mailed it in, and they mailed him his bachelor's degree. And he took that bachelor's degree to the local high school, and he got himself a job teaching. And he's teaching there for a while, and he does a lot of bedding, and he buys a house, like, on the lake. And he stays there, and he's doing some bedding, and he won, like, $10,000 in bedding. And the bookie was a little sketchy, scary-like, and connected. And so he's like, all right, well, I got my winning. I'm going to head out. Deuces. And while he was there, he was actually borrowing books from the library and stuff like that to pass the time. So it's like, deuces. And he heads out, and he heads down to Louisiana, and he goes to New Orleans, and he's looking for a place to stay. Excuse me. He finds a place to stay. And then he finds the book that he had borrowed back in Florida. And he calls the librarian there, because they, you know, became kind of close. And she's like, oh, hey, yeah, just mail it to us, and, you know, where are you? You sound like you're long distance. And he's like, he says that he's in Louisiana, but he says he's in Baton Rouge instead of New Orleans. And she's like, all right, yeah, just mail the book back to us. And sorry to tell you, but your house got burnt up, it burnt down. And he's like, what happened? So it sounds like somebody threw a Molotov into the house to set the house on fire. So he thinks that it's the bookie and all of that shadiness. So he's like, all right, I'll mail you the book. He mails the book, and he leaves Louisiana and heads on down to Texas, or heads on over to Texas. And he goes to Dallas, and he discovers that he doesn't like Dallas. Dallas is hot. There's a lot of racism. There's a lot of craziness. And is dirty, and he just does not like it at all. He stays there for a little bit, and then he finally, you know, he tried to find a place to rent. He was there for 2 weeks trying to look for a place to rent, didn't have any success. So he, you know, was like, I don't like it here, so let me keep going. So he goes about 20 minutes west, and he 20 minutes west from Dallas, and he runs into, like, this little small farm town that he actually liked. It seemed quaint. He liked it, and he found a place to live, like, right away. And he actually landed himself a substitute job, and he became really close to the principal and his fiance, who happens to be the librarian. And he really just became, they all became friends and very likable, and they offered him a job, a permanent position, because the English teacher there retired, and he accepted a permanent position. And sadly, the librarian, she passed. She had leukemia, so she died. But not before, you know, they had a nice couple month relationship, you know, friendship and everything. And she introduced him to Sadie. And Sadie is the new librarian who was taking over for the old librarian. She set that up before she passed, because she knew she was very, very ill and didn't have much longer. She introduced Jake to Sadie. And Sadie is Jake's age. She's really, really tall, too. She's 6 feet. And the librarian who passed, she knows that something's going on with Jake. Jake is writing a book. It's called Murders, Town Murders, and it's about clown murders of Derry. And also, she's like, you're not who you say you are you? And Jake is like, I'm not, but I'm not going to tell you who I am. She's like, I won't tell anybody. I like you. And that's kind of like it. That was the first half of the book. So we're moving on to part two. I'm going to start that tonight. reading that tonight. It's going to be nice and stormy. So I really appreciate you sticking to everything, to listening to me. I know this one was a little bit longer. This is a lot longer of a book. So I do appreciate you, and I appreciate you following and liking and subscribing and hanging out with me. You can find me, I'm Sherry's Joy. You can find me with the DigiCast. We are on YouTube at the DigiCast One. We have a blog, thedigicast.substack.com. We have a Flipboard. You can search for DigiCast. We don't have much up there yet, but we are working on building content for you. We have Facebook, The DigiCast. You can find us on Instagram, The DigiCast, Spotify, The DigiCast, and we have an affiliate page for Amazon. So all of that information is in the description below. Again, I am Sherry's Joy, half of The DigiCast. I appreciate you listening, and please, 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 please feel free to leave your comments and concerns, any, you know, suggestions or any critiques or anything like that. I would appreciate it. This is technically my second book, well, second episode. It's really not my second episode. This is the second book that I've discussed with Bookmark. I'm trying to figure out how to word that here. But this is part one of 11/22/63 of Bookmarked. Sherry's Joy. Love the book.